This is audible.
Plié, Ironside Academy, Book 1. Written by Jane Washington. Narrated by Jennifer Sterling. Chapter 1. Ships That Pass. 16 years old. The inside of the car was thick with tension. It shivered along the windows, raising the hairs on the back of Isabel's neck. Every time her father shifted or cleared his throat, both she and her mother froze. They winced. They waited, holding their breath, relaxing only when his mannerisms turned into coincidences instead of precursors. It was a day of celebration for many families. Isabel's family wasn't excluded from that group, but they weren't experienced with celebrating anyone other than her father. They existed to support him, to skirt around him, stepping into the bright halo of his glow only when he ordered it, sharing in his limelight only when the accessorizing of his family might make him shine brighter. This day was for Isabel, and that made him uncomfortable. It made them all uncomfortable.
"Please," Isabel's mother dared to beg softly, her hands twisting in her lap. "I just want to walk her inside."
The car was quiet for a moment, the plea like a pencil scattering loudly to the floor in the silent examination halls where the gifted kids were herded at the end of each year to prove that the settlement schools were teaching them how to read, write, and fear the outside world. And then the silence broke. He pulled over in a sudden jerk, throwing Isabel against the side of the car. He wasn't thrown. He was too big, as alphas should be, his shoulder already touching the window. His teeth ground together as he spoke, the side of his profile visible as he leaned over the space between seats, a tiny muscle pulsing beneath the sweep of his blonde hair over his forehead.
"You're pushing it, Karen."
Isabel's mother shrank back, but Braun Carter didn't press forward. He simply rolled his big body from the seat, throwing the door closed in his wife's face. Isabel watched as her mother scrambled for the handle to go after him, and she quickly reached for the older woman's shoulder, stopping her.
"Mama, it's okay."
She was used to this, swallowing down the fear, tucking away her own pain. It wouldn't stay buried long. It never could with her kind. Sigmas were vessels of emotion, more than the other ranks of gifted. But she preferred it this way. She sometimes thought of herself as a little paper boat bobbing through a river of gutter water, something people could focus on while life tried to pull them under. It was an approximation of how she was designed, to exist in the tumultuous sway of life, though she was stubbornly riding the waves when submersion was the proper way. Her mother twisted around, trying to blink away the tears in her eyes, but a loud, impatient knock against the window, no doubt telling Isabel to hurry up, had her losing the battle, and soon tears were tracking down her cheeks to wobble along the edges of her jaw. Karen Carter was always submerged.
"You be good,"
she said, still in that softly trembling voice.
"I'll be there at the first family visit in a month. Just don't let them see you cry, okay? They're going to want to see who can break you first. But you're stronger than that. Stronger than most Sigmas. I promise they'll never see me cry."
Isabel smiled as her mother's hand covered hers, squeezing tightly.
"I love you, Mama."
Isabel's door flew open, her father's face appearing in the opening as he hunkered down. She quickly slipped away from one parent and toward the other before the situation could escalate. He didn't step aside immediately. His light, honeyed eyes slid between his wife and his daughter, the gold flecks around his iris brightening as his pupil contracted. After a tense moment, he moved out of Isabel's way, gripping her bicep to drag her after him. He already had her bags waiting, and he turned without another word, walking them over to the path that led up the desert mountainside.
Here.
He set the bags at her feet.
Take them yourself.
She hadn't expected anything more. Her father was a rare alpha, and she was a rare sigma. Their society had a hierarchy, and the polar ends of it were sparsely populated, separated from the more common middle rungs simply by the reality of their minority. Her father was at the top, and Isabel was at the bottom. He had not expected his genes to be less dominant when he discovered his mate was a sigma, and both mother and daughter had been paying for it since. It would have been unseemly for him to escort her all the way to her dorm, carrying her bags like a porter. He had made sure she knew that during the drive. It was enough that he had driven her at all.
See you soon,
he grunted, cupping her cheek. She flinched out of habit, and his face darkened for a moment before his breath hissed between his teeth and he spun on his heel, lumbering back to the car. It was impressive that he even had one. But then again, Bron Carter wasn't just any gifted. He was a graduate of the very academy she was about to enter. A winning graduate. An icon. This was the first thing she had ever done that he actually gave a shit about. Not enough to walk her inside, though. She grabbed the handle of her suitcase, shifting her backpack on her shoulder as she forced her legs to move.
You better stop acting like I'm forcing you to go.
Her father's words when he found her crying over her bags that morning chased her up the hill, followed by her own hesitant bolstering. He didn't force her to do anything. It was her pleasure, her duty, to obey his every command. His and any other alphas. Not that she had met any others. Don't look back, Isabel. Not all new things are bad. She approached the first checkpoint, which had a gate for cars to pass through and a narrow path for people.
Where are your parents?
The guard immediately asked, peering out of his small service window. They already left. She dug out her paperwork, handing it all over. The rest of the world had gone digital, but not all gifted families could afford phones or computers, so the academy sent out everything in hard copy. He glanced at her paperwork and picked up a receiver.
Can you send a car down? We've got a student walking.
His eyes caught on something on the page he was reading, and he paused, leaning out of the service window to get a better look at her eyes. She fought the urge to duck her chin down, lifting her face for inspection. Her sigma ring was black, starkly circling the outside of her iris, which was a light gold like her father's, though the darker bronze flecks were more prominent in hers, making the rest of her iris seem almost translucent.
Disregard.
The guard set the receiver aside, directing his next words to her.
You can walk.
He nodded his head toward the narrow pedestrian gate, handing back her papers, his tone dismissive.
Welcome to Ironside, Sigma.
She averted her eyes, showing no reaction. The ring around his iris was silver, marking him as a beta. He wasn't as potent as an alpha, but in the absence of an alpha, the betas were the ones who stepped up to lead. They put the gift in gifted, with their interesting abilities, charismatic personalities, and stubborn entitlement, which by some miracle survived the constant subjugation of their people. Most of the graduating icons, like her father, were betas. She pushed through the pedestrian gate, ignoring the burn in her muscles as the slope became steep, her suitcase gaining weight as it dragged behind her, the wheels threatening to snap against every step. She paused halfway to the top for a break, turning to look over the prickly, sunburnt valley, mesas cutting into the distance. She had always loved the desert, even though she rarely left the city. Her mother told her so many stories of the settlement she grew up in that Isabel had adapted it into her dreams, imagining that she, too, came from a life behind sandstone brick walls, playing in the red dirt with her siblings. They would all wear clothes too small for them, and her youngest siblings would eat mud pies, not for play, but because they were hungry. It was wrong for her to romanticize the hardships of her parents' childhoods, of the lives most other gifted lived. But Isabel couldn't help it. It wasn't the suffering she was drawn to. It was the community, the family. What was the point of an apartment in the sky with doormen and porters and a private chef if she spent all her time hiding from weighty footfalls and lights flickering on in the middle of the night? It took about half an hour to reach the top, and during that time, she was only passed by one other car. The rest of the new students would have traveled by private coach from their respective settlements, arriving earlier that morning. When the academy came into view, she stopped again, savoring her last moment of relative isolation. As soon as she stepped through those big glass entry doors, her every action would be recorded and broadcast to the outside world, because that was the whole point of Ironside Academy. An opulent, resort-style school for young adults and college-aged kids. The only educational institution available to gifted kids outside of the primitive settlement schools, perched in the middle of the desert where it was tucked safely away from humanity. They would be given every little luxury they could ever want, just as long as they performed for the cameras, for the humans, for the outside world. Most kids came for their families, to send home money until they graduated. But some kids actually came to win. It was a highly improbable outcome for her, as a Sigma, but she had lived the benefits of an Ironside icon every day, thanks to her father. She had enjoyed days of pampering with her mother, usually on her birthday, where fashion designers brought clothes to their apartment for them to try on before they descended to the day spa that took up a whole floor of the building they lived in. Her family had a slick black town car and a beautiful home outside the settlements. Her father was a recognized citizen who was allowed to own land and vote. There were toys and clothing made in his image, and he had acted in several movies since he graduated, earning the family even more money. She understood the appeal, but that would never be her. As a Sigma, she couldn't even win a game of Uno. Whenever she felt herself pulling ahead, some kind of basic instinct to make people happy took over, and she folded. She let everyone else win. She couldn't help it. "Name," a woman demanded of her the second she walked through the doors into the air-conditioned room. "Isabel Carter," she mumbled, nervously adjusting her luggage. When the attendant raised an inquisitive eyebrow, she repeated it louder. "Isabel Carter." The woman scrolled through her tablet as Isabel glanced around, thankful she wasn't the only student there, before she peered up at the tops of the walls, looking for the cameras. She had consumed all the information she could find online about how to survive Ironside, and the one thing the past students kept repeating was, "Don't look at the cameras all the time, or your screen time will be cut." "Carter, Carter." The attendant frowned, tapping her stylus against her chin. "What dorm?"
Dorm S?"
she stuttered.
Everyone knew the dorms were named after rank, ranging from dorm A for Alpha all the way down to dorm O for Omega. She hadn't actually heard of a dorm S, but she supposed there had to be one.
"We don't have a dorm S."
"Oh, Carter."
The woman emphasized Isabel's name this time, her attention zeroing in on Isabel's eyes.
"You're our only Sigma, and we certainly weren't going to build you your own dorm, even if your dad is an icon."
She laughed, and Isabel heard another of the assistants nearby chuckling as well.
"You'll be in dorm O. Consider it an upgrade. Here's your map, and, it looks like we forgot to set aside a welcome pack for you. Can you whistle?"
Isabel nodded, her lips pressing tightly together.
"Good. Just whistle if you're being attacked or assaulted. We don't have any spare assault horns."
"That's okay. Thank you." She shuffled away, glad she wasn't going to have to carry around one of those stupid horns. They were as much of a joke as the classes she would be enrolling in. A clip had gone viral the year before of the fifth-year students doing a Christmas variety show of assault horn carol renditions. That was how seriously people took them. She consulted the map and let a small sigh escape her lips. Naturally, Dorm O was the furthest away. Dorm A was the closest, sequestered to the side of the academy entrance. It was nestled into a hill that Isabel knew to be artificial from the Creating Ironside documentary. It wasn't even legal anymore, the amount of dirt they had hauled in to build Alpha Hill. 29,000 cubic yards of dirt. The documentary had shown the trucks like a line of marching ants crawling into the construction site, looking regal and proud in their new royal blue painted glory, the words Ironside stamped boldly on their sides. Dorm A overlooked a small lake formed by an artificial waterfall tumbling from the top of the butte above. It pooled into an oasis outside the dorm before traveling through underground pipes to the main lake, which Isabel circled now to get to the northern point of the campus. There were hydraulic pumps beneath the main lake, cycling water back up to the top of the waterfall. The documentary had also explained the expansive rainwater harvesting system on the other side of the buttes and the emergency water deliveries needed to maintain the waterfall and keep the lakes filled. She always tried not to think about the droughts in the settlements when she thought about that. Dorms B and D were on the other side of the glittering blue expanse, separated by a small nature reserve, so they had lovely views from all sides. The government spared no expense on Ironside, just as they spared no expense on their icons. This was one of the country's biggest industries, contributing a staggering, yet somehow undisclosed, number of billions to the yearly economy. Meanwhile, the rest of the gifted lived in secure settlements, weighed down by poverty and picked off by common infections and diseases that would have been treatable in the outside world. There were reasons for that, of course, reasons the humans eagerly accepted. But there was only one real reason, and that was fear. The gifted were different, other, unknown. The human population in general were welcoming of the other, curious about things they didn't understand. But it only took one bad apple to ruin the whole bunch. That's how her piano teacher had described it. She still wasn't sure if he had been talking about the gifted or the humans, because it wasn't a topic of discussion that was allowed in their household. According to her father, the settlements existed not just to protect the humans from the gifted, but also the other way around. It was best for everyone, and he wouldn't be told differently, even though he lived in a tower in the city. "Well, hello there," a voice called out, drawing her attention to a cameraman who waved at her from one of the upper paths, winding his way down to walk beside her. "Aren't you a pretty little thing? What's your name? Sigma? Wait, seriously?" He shook his head, his shoulders slumping. "Never mind." He lowered his camera and walked away. Just like that. It wasn't that Sigmas were hated, necessarily. It's just that they weren't interesting. They all had the same power. Empathy. Isabel could take on people's negative feelings, leaving them lighter and happier. The empath ability actually made Sigmas incredibly useful, except that they could also block themselves off. They could be selfish with their powers, even if it went against their natures. Because at the end of the day, there was still something self-preserving within them. Something that didn't want to exist, constantly doused in darkness. So, to the rest of the gifted, the Sigmas essentially had no power at all, since they refused to use it with any regularity. And to the humans, that just made them boring. The Alphas were the most exciting, of course. But they were too rare to hang your hopes on. which left the betas and deltas as the main sources of entertainment and the omegas as their main targets. By the time she reached dorm O, she was desperate for a shower, but she was delayed when she realized her name hadn't been included on the room assignment sheet. She knocked on the door to the office where one of the dorm supervisors sat at a desk tapping away on her laptop.
Yes?
The supervisor turned her head, looking at Isabel over the top of her glasses. I haven't been assigned a room. Isabel shifted her weight to ease the ache in her feet. She tried to ignore the stickiness of sweat against the back of her neck and the dull ache in her calves. The supervisor sighed, and Isabel could already tell that the woman thought she hadn't looked properly.
Name?
She asked, pushing up from her chair. Isabel told her and watched as she scanned the list on the wall outside, finding that Isabel's name was, indeed, missing.
Are you in the right dorm?
The supervisor nudged her glasses down further, peering at Isabel's eyes before pausing, a frown twisting her lips.
Ah, the Sigma. I forgot about you. Wait there.
She disappeared into her office again and reemerged with a set of keys.
Follow me, Carter. You can call me Professor Yarrow, by the way. I teach charcoal sketching. Each level of Dorm O has two Omega professors assigned to it, one in the room at each end, if you need anything.
Isabel didn't even have time to answer before Yarrow was striding off. She hurried to follow, trying to make herself as small as possible in the chaos of the dorm. It was packed, people chatting excitedly, camera crews darting through the tangle of activity. She assumed there usually weren't so many Ironside staff inside the dorms, but they likely wanted to capture every face so that there would be historical footage of whichever icon eventually graduated in 5 years. Not that it was likely to be an Omega. Even when the Omegas did trend online, it was for some scene they had been involved in that featured a Delta or a Beta, or an Alpha, of course. But in that case, they were lucky they weren't cut out of the shot completely. It made Dorm O interesting to her, because it wasn't shown anywhere near as much as the others. Yarrow climbed several stories to the top level, unlocking the first door past the office at the end of the hallway. It didn't look like the other dorm rooms, which were all labeled with gold lettering and had cute little notice boards on the outside. This one looked more like a storage cupboard. The door stuck, forcing Yarrow to shoulder it open and stumble a step inside.
Ah, there we go.
She wiped her hands on her skirt before handing Isabel the key.
Welcome home. The bathroom facilities are in the middle of the hall. Men's on the left, ladies on the right. You aren't an Omega, obviously, but you are permitted to use their facilities.
Isabel wasn't stupid. She had only ever missed one episode of Ironside Academy when she had been sick. The punishment she received from her father had ensured that the next time she was sick, she dragged a bucket to the lounge and fixed her eyes to the screen all the same. She knew that even the Omega dorms were fairly luxurious. She knew that they had a bed, at the very least. Yarrow had led her to an empty room. It was narrow and small, the window missing a pane. There were a few cleaning supplies shoved into the corner, and a dusty bookshelf that housed a few rags and bottles of disinfectant. Someone had dropped a box into the center of the room, a big sticker on top. Welcome to your new home. Below the sticker, a name had been scrawled. Carter. She took all this in quickly, wary of the cameras in the hallway. Not that they would have cared about her today. Not with the other big news on Academy grounds that morning. After a quiet assessment, she thanked Yarrow politely. The woman gave a satisfied nod and walked off, snapping the door closed behind her. Isabel took a steadying breath before exploring the box of supplies. Luxurious sheets and blankets for the bed she didn't have. A little cactus in a clay pot, an Ironside-branded water bottle, keyring, and sweatshirt. At least there were towels. There was also another map and a handbook of rules. Copies of those had already been posted to her, but this version of the rule handbook had tabbed pages. A quick glance revealed that they were trying to draw attention to rules that might affect first years, such as the placement of cameras and the forbidden use of gifted abilities in any way that might be considered aggressive or offensive. After going through the box, she sat back on her heels to survey the room again. Any other person might have cried at this point, but it barely registered to Isabel. She pushed her bags out of the way and used the cleaning supplies to properly clean the floor before she laid out the bedding, folding the thickest blanket in three to use as a mattress, glad that her slender Sigma stature wouldn't need very much surface area. She cleaned the shelf and the windowsill, picking out little bits of broken glass before packing the cleaning supplies into the empty welcome box. She unpacked most of her belongings, folding most of her clothes onto the middle shelves, lining her shoes up against the wall, and piling her books and school supplies onto the top shelves. She left the rest of her clothes in her suitcase and hung her coats and towels on the hooks stuck to the back of the door. It wasn't exactly the penthouse apartment she was used to, but she was well practiced at not expecting much. The door had a lock, and she couldn't hear her father's footsteps in the hallway or her mother's quiet sobs behind the bathroom door. This would more than do. Isabel's classes were emailed to her the next morning. Introduction to musical theory, introduction to language and literature, fashion and design, module 1, beginners theater and film, introduction to applied arts, performing arts, module 1, introduction to fine art. She didn't get the chance to pick her own classes. The appropriate forms had already been submitted online, which meant that her father had likely dealt with it without consulting her. Not that it mattered. She had no delusions of becoming an icon, so there wasn't a particular skill she was interested in honing, but that didn't mean her father was without ambition. Part of the benefits provided to her family had been free education and tutoring, and he had taken full advantage of that. Her classes had started at 5 a.m. and ended at 8 p.m. At first, she had been allowed her weekends to herself, but that was before one of her tutors suggested that she had an aptitude for dance. Her father hadn't wanted to drop any of her other lessons, so he added more onto the weekend. She wondered why he hadn't put her in any dance classes all through the first day of Welcome Week, until one of the Dorm O supervisors pulled her aside, lecturing her about booking practice rooms and not turning up, and how she was being selfish with resources. Her father, or more likely her mother under his orders, was booking practice time for her through her own online portal. After that, she made sure to check any changes to her timetable before setting out for the day, and she made it through the rest of Welcome Week without anyone taking notice of her, which wasn't unusual. She was unassuming and quiet, and she always kept her head down. Being the daughter of a prior icon was the only interesting thing about her, and she more than made up for that with her underwhelming presence and personality. Or at least, that was how her father had put it. One morning in the bathroom, a few of the Omegas had even been gossiping about the Sigma in the cleaning closet right beside her, never once noticing that she was brushing her teeth two mirrors over. Everything seemed to be going smoothly, until one morning in Introduction to Musical Theory. There were around 18 students gathered on the floor, taking notes while a Delta professor wrote on a board in front of them. Most of the classrooms were very casual, encouraging the students to cluster together and interact for the cameras. It was a quiet morning, a little too quiet. The professors had dual responsibilities— to provide a way for students to upskill if they were on the icon track, and to keep things entertaining for the show. Which explained what Professor Katz did next. "Where's the Sigma?" Katz asked, her marker tapping against her arm agitatedly. The others looked around, unsure, as Isabel's heart jumped into her throat. She had been sitting by herself, slightly apart from the others, her notebook resting on her folded legs. She raised a shaking hand, earning a few surprised looks, Perhaps her Black Sigma ring was easily mistaken for the Navy Omega ring if people didn't look too closely.
Right, there you are.
Katz tossed the marker onto her desk.
Do you play any instruments? You're the only student in class who didn't grow up in one of the settlements. You certainly had ample opportunity and access.
She wasn't sure, but she thought the surprise on some of the faces around her had melted into jealousy. Children of the Icons were only ever ridiculed or worshipped, depending on their likelihood of following in their parents' footsteps. There was no in-between.
Piano?
Isabel twisted her fingers, keeping her eyes down.
An elegant instrument, Katz murmured. A wealthy instrument. But we're fortunate here, are we not, to have instruments such as these?
Isabel still had her gaze directed down, but she could hear footsteps and the quiet sound of the shiny grand piano's lid being lifted. She dreaded the professor's next words, even as she expected them.
Go ahead, Sigma. Play for us.
Isabel walked to the bench numbly, only raising her eyes high enough to set them on the keys as she lifted her hands. She had never played for anyone before except her teacher and her parents. Her teacher had been kind, a middle-aged man who considered himself a fan of her father, willing to do anything to please him, even if it meant tutoring a Sigma as though she might actually make something of herself at the famous academy. Isabel swallowed, sweat gathering on her forehead. This was it. This was the moment her father would see. This was her chance to change his opinion, to make him proud, to show that all the lessons he spent on her weren't wasted. She knew he had pulled strings to get her into the academy, despite her rank.
Oh, this is embarrassing, one of the kids murmured.
You can do it,
another one spoke up, though they didn't sound especially genuine, more pained. This was awkward for everyone. They wanted it to be over.
Why couldn't she move?
I thought Sigmas were supposed to be obedient,
another kid muttered before whoever he had been speaking to hushed him.
Tell her what to play,
someone offered up loudly. Her vision had gone blurry, and it was becoming difficult to breathe, but she tried her hardest not to let her reaction show, despite how loud and ragged her breathing sounded to her own ears. She focused on the ivory and black contrast of the keys, on the red felt at the very top, the little motes of dust drifting in front of her face, the taste of bile in the back of her throat.
Do you know any songs?
Katz asked, tapping the top of the piano to get Isabel's attention. Isabel tried to nod, to speak, but nothing happened. Eventually, Katz pinched the bridge of her nose, muttering something lowly.
Since this lesson is on tonality, a voice drawled, I assume you want an example of tonal music with a tonic note?
The voice was moving closer. A form settled onto the bench beside her. Isabel felt his energy, bitter, with a bite to it. It rolled over her, far more powerful than she had expected. He was angry or annoyed, and she let a little bit of it slip into her before she could help herself, welcoming the darkness like she was trying to punish herself. He stilled for the briefest of moments, possibly sensing what she had done, before lifting his hands to the keys. He was warm, his shoulder set above hers, the side of his body radiating heat into hers. He smelled warm, too, like clove and wood smoke, deep and rich and a little spicy. She couldn't tell if it was soap or something else. His fingers were long and graceful, his skin tone smooth and perfect, not quite pale, but not quite tanned. His nails cut short and immaculate, a little scar on his thumb. She stared at those fingers, somehow knowing that they were capable of complex chords, especially from the way he arranged his hands to begin, weighing his wrists lightly. And then he played, Happy Birthday to You, loudly, obnoxiously.
To take the attention away from her, or to rub it in? She jerked her head to the side as everyone started laughing, catching his eyes for the briefest second before she stood and fled the classroom. Light, bright gray, like an ice-capped ocean, ringed in heady gold. An alpha. The clip went viral. Isabel knew because at the end of the month, she received an email from the Ironside officials informing her of her prize. For contributing to one of the most viewed clips that week, she was to be awarded with a dedicated study cubicle in the library. Just for her, whenever she wanted it, for the entire year. It was extra generous, even as a reward, but she soon realized why when it incited the anger of the other students. The very next day, someone threw a flare through her window, breaking another of the panels and shattering glass all over her sleeping spot on the floor. It scared her enough that she tried to stay up most nights, studying in her cubicle, until that, too, was taken away. It wasn't actually removed, of course, but every time she went there, she encountered a boy leaning up against it, waiting for her. After a few days of this, she finally decided to approach him, even though she knew the cameras were probably waiting for a confrontation. He was a little taller than she was, with wavy brown hair that brushed against his collar. "Can I help you?" she asked as he stepped aside for her to pass before blocking her in, notching his elbows on either side of the cubicle opening.
"Name's Bellamy."
He was so confident, so strongly spoken.
"Adam Bellamy."
He waited, but she didn't offer her own name.
"Carter, right?"
he chuckled.
"We all know your dad. He's a legend."
"I believe that's the point," Isabel whispered, but he only leaned closer, having not heard her.
"What?"
"I asked if I could help you." She set her bag down, inspecting her cubicle for any damage. She really loved it, even if it had caused her trouble. She had stuck up a photo of her parents on one of the short walls and had a few select books lined on the left, waiting to be leafed through.
"What are you doing Friday?"
Bellamy displayed a row of straight white teeth. She quickly looked down. "Studying?" He laughed like her answer was hilarious.
"Hopefully not the piano," he teased.
The outside world weren't the only people who watched Ironside. Everyone did. It was a small, albeit mocking, beacon of hope for them. Every year, one of them was elevated. Sometimes, those icons tried to change things, to make life overall better for the gifted. Isabel flinched, and he immediately changed his tone, becoming contrite.
"Sorry, I meant no offense. I'm sure you're great at piano. So, Friday? I won't tease you anymore, I promise."
"I don't understand. What about Friday?" She glanced up, confused, drumming her nails against the desk. He laughed, shaking his head in a charming sort of way.
"Do you want to hang out? With me. On Friday."
She was already shaking her head before he finished.
"No, thank you."
"Come on," he coaxed, not even missing a beat. "You can't study all the time. You need to have some fun. Let the people see who you really are."
When she didn't look convinced, he tried a new tactic.
"I'm sure your dad would love to see you making some friends, and with betas, no less."
She swallowed against the sudden lump in her throat.
"Please?"
He sensed her weakness, ducking his head so that he could peer up at her, still smiling, not taking no for an answer, and maybe even showing off his silver beta ring.
"Just to hang out? Meet some nice people?"
"Oh, okay."
"Great!"
He reached into his pocket, withdrawing his phone.
"Put in your number. I'll be in touch."
She did as he asked, her fingers tingling as he walked off. She sat down after he left, wondering if the cameras had seen a beta trying to befriend her, and if it would please her father. Maybe if it did, they would finally visit her.
since they hadn't showed up for any of the family visits yet.
She should have known better.
That was all she could think as she stood by the lake, hair plastered to her face, her dress sticking to her skin as she dripped all over the pathway. Someone was manipulating the light, shrouding those who had pushed her into the lake while keeping her visible for the cameras perched on large posts, vigilantly recording everything. The cameras that had watched her standing there, nervously, wondering if she had the wrong time and place. The cameras that had watched her seemingly stumble over a rock right into the lake. The cameras that had watched her scramble for the bank, her entire system frozen from the shock of the cold water. Only a beta or an alpha could have managed that kind of light manipulation. But she shoved the thought out of her head. The who didn't matter. She was the fool, and she had allowed herself to walk into the obvious trap when she should have known better. She had only herself to blame. Bellamy was nowhere to be seen. She wrapped her arms around her torso and raced back to the dorm, only to find all the doors locked. She tried to knock, but was answered only by muted giggles. There were no emergency phones around, because at Ironside, there were no emergencies. Only highlights. Isabel slumped into the hollow of the doorway, to wait for someone else to enter or leave the building, and sure enough, a group of third-year girls approached from the pathway leading away from the lake. "Everything okay?" one of them asked before another elbowed her.
"It's the Sigma,"
she informed the speaker lowly. They ignored her after that, but thankfully allowed her to slip into the building behind them. They had taken their keys with them, which Isabel took note of. She showered quickly before locking herself into her room and curling up on her pallet of blankets with her laptop. There was no point in checking the Ironside website, but she did it anyway. Production didn't move quickly enough to expose her humiliation. It didn't matter how big their team was, the agency behind Ironside couldn't seem to air the drama sooner than a week after it happened in real time. They needed to review it all, cut it together, edit it, and, of course, have the famous Ed Jones bringing it all together with his charismatic commentary. The most viewed clips hadn't been knocked out of their spots yet, remaining the same as the week before. First-year Alpha Spade is a genius. Another Alpha? Is Hart a human lie detector? Spoiled for choice, Dorm A has never looked so full. Beta Heartthrob, does first-year Bellamy already have a fan club? We don't know where to look. Bron Carter has a Sigma daughter. Alpha Reed is a low-key comedian. The coverage was mostly focused on the 8 new Alphas who had joined that year, which wasn't a surprise. She was fairly sure Dorm A would have been empty if they hadn't managed to repopulate it. Still, 8 Alphas was unheard of in a single year, not to mention the 2 new Alpha professors. She skipped over the highlights, clicking on last night's episode and setting the laptop off to the side. Her vision of the screen blurred, but not from tears. She slipped into a fretful sleep, kept company by her promise. They would never see her break. The library was so quiet she didn't really need the headphones, but she used them to focus anyway, channeling what she had learned in one of her art classes to sketch her own birthday cake, drawing 17 candles on top. Things had settled down since she had arrived at Ironside, but she still didn't have any friends. And her parents hadn't come. Not the first month, nor the second. Not the 7th, which had just begun. Not even to wish her a happy birthday. Still, she chose to celebrate, in her own small way. "Draw something you wish you had," the sketching assignment was titled. The professors focused on dreams and wishes a lot in those art classes, trying to fill the students with enough hope that they started properly competing with each other. There wasn't much point in staying any longer, not with her eyelids drooping. She wouldn't be able to concentrate on her work. so she packed up her things and tucked her headphones away, walking toward the stairs. The top floor of the library was mostly used to store boxes of books and broken furniture. There were only 3 cameras and they didn't work anymore, which was exactly why Isabel made this her secret space, having given up her private cubicle on the 2nd floor to an insistent beta only 2 weeks after it had been awarded to her. She had almost reached the stairs when something flickered in her periphery, something that didn't belong in that quiet, abandoned space. Clutching the strap on her bag nervously, she edged around the side of the staircase, peering into a darkened corner of the library, where someone was half hidden beneath one of the blown lights, shadows enveloping their hunched shoulders.
Are you okay? She asked, stepping closer.
His head lifted so slowly, like he was reaching out with his senses before he bothered with his eyes. But when they finally met hers, she found that they were completely black, the color bleeding all the way out from his pupil, spilling like oil to the sooty lashes framing his eyes. She froze, her breath stuttering. She had read something once, something she wasn't supposed to read based on the way her father beat her afterwards and began locking his office cabinet. It described a special alpha ability called ferality, where the affected alpha became beast-like, destroying everything around them and causing harm to anyone who got in their way. Illegal, the document had said. Risk too high to reliably mitigate. Deemed highly dangerous. Must be decommissioned or destroyed. She had never heard the term again. Not in all the episodes of Ironside or in the rare visits back to the settlement to visit her parents' families. But she remembered the image in the book and some of the terms it had used. It was seared into her mind. A nightmare on the page coming back to life in the deepest, most disorienting of her dreams. She remembered the deep, endless black eyes, glittering with malice. She remembered the explosion of dark veins webbing out, like the dark sickness was spreading, crawling over the rest of the head. And now, she was staring at it again. Except this time, it wasn't in a book or a nightmare. This time, it was a boy. Flesh and blood, only 10 paces away. Deep, endless pools of dark swam in the space of his eyes, infected veins disappearing into his hairline. He seemed to be staring at her, but she had no way of telling.
"Leave,"
he growled low, the sound barely human. Loud and textured, his voice echoed with danger. She moved to obey without even thinking, but was stopping again just as instinctively, fighting against the strange pull the order had over her, having caught sight of something else. His cheeks were wet. He was crying? She felt his emotion nudge at her, and she cautiously allowed it, expecting some sense of sadness or conflict. But instead, she was almost bowled completely over by the tidal wave of his despair. She dropped her bag, and his head shifted minutely so that it seemed like his black eyes were following the movement. It was oddly mechanical. Other than the tears tracking down his cheeks, no other part of him moved. He didn't even seem to be breathing. She vaguely remembered the warnings of that book, but her nature was already taking over, driving her toward the boy, that steel door she usually hid behind creaking open, sucking in more of the horrible emotion he drowned in. She reached the spot where he was hiding, huddled or crouched. He seemed to want to disappear, but ready to pounce all at once, like he didn't possess either a fight or flight response, but both at the same time. She turned to sit beside him, her legs crossed like his. His head had moved to follow her, his nostrils flaring. She pulled more of the darkness into herself, feeling it settle with sickening heaviness into the pit of her stomach as his face swam closer in her blurry vision. They were close enough for Isabel to see the way the blackness slowly bled from his eyes as she blinked away the haze from her own, still sipping on his awful, consuming emotion. The black sank into his iris, revealing a golden alpha ring, enclosing eyes of a dark, stormy gray. His dark hair was messy, strands stuck to his skin by sweat. His jaw was so tight she could see the muscles working, his teeth grinding.
"Sigma,"
he croaked, those stormy eyes now flitting over her face. His chest moved, and Isabel felt herself slump a little in relief that he finally seemed to be breathing.
"Isabel,"
she corrected, her tone husky, a small whine of pain in the back of her voice. He didn't seem to hear her.
"You took it."
His head turned, his wide stare dragging to the hands in his lap. They were broken and bloody.
"Why?"
he rattled, disbelieving, a hint of a growl still riding his uneven voice. Isabel wanted to answer, but the stolen emotion was weighing her down, and it was too much for her. It would only be a matter of time before she was unconscious or violently ill, so she struggled to her feet, wobbling her way to the stairs.
"Wait,"
he called, but she kept going, faster and faster, her vision swimming. She was already sweating and shaking by the time she made it to Dorm O, and from there, she veered sideways into the first floor bathroom, collapsing onto the floor, where the first seizure took her. She knew better than to go to her room. If she were in any real danger, she didn't want to think about how long it would take someone to find her. With any luck, she would come back around to herself before the sun came up, and nobody, not even the cameras, would know what happened. Theodore Kane watched from the top-story window of the library as the Sigma hurried along the darkened pathway below, her steps tottering and unsteady. Everyone knew there was a Sigma at the school, but nobody, least of all him, expected her to show her ability. They very rarely did. He pushed off the window, his legs aching like he'd been running for hours as he pulled in a deep breath, sniffing the air. A low, faint growl carried along his indrawn breath, an after-effect of the ferality. He followed her light scent, unable to distinguish what it was just yet. It led him to a clean cubicle tucked into the very corner of the wall. Everything else was covered in dust. What was she doing here so late at night? The question surprised him. He had enough on his plate to think about. With another shuddering breath, he tucked his busted hands into his pockets and approached the stairwell, noticing a loose piece of paper that had fallen to the ground. He swiped it up, staring at the drawing.
"Draw something you wish you had."
The birthday cake had 17 candles. A strange little pang of something niggled in the back of his mind, but he pushed it away, folding the paper carefully and tucking it into his pocket to dwell on later. There were far more pressing issues that needed his attention before the sun came up. Chapter 2. The Chariot. 1 year later.
"Come on, Carter!"
The other girls whined at her as they ran up the pathway toward Jasmine Field. Isabel would still be hard-pressed to say she had friends, but a year and a half in, she had at least learned that people were willing to let her tag along, if only for her last name and to boss her around. The recreation area was to the north of Dorm D, with a little stream running through it from the main lake. It was separated into four squares by jasmine-choked fences and connected over the stream by adorable little footbridges, electric lanterns attempting to capture every little misdeed the students got up to beneath the weeping willows. The garden oasis was entirely out of place in the desert, and she tried not to think about how much water they piped in to keep the foreign plants so lush, green, and happy. Some of the Betas had organized a party for Bellamy, whose father had just landed a new movie role. It took a few months for Isabel to connect the dots that Adam Bellamy was that Bellamy, the son of her father's greatest rival. Both of them were icons, with Bellamy's father graduating the year after her father. It explained his little trick on her in their first year, and she had steered well clear of him ever since. Not that it stopped him staring and smirking whenever he caught sight of her, despite her best efforts. The group of Omega girls she trailed branched off as soon as they spilled past the jasmine fence, some of them going into the left square and some into the right. Isabel faltered for a moment before following Eve Indy, who seemed the nicest of the group, almost like a friend. Eve smiled when Isabel sidled up to her.
"Here, drink this."
She passed Isabel a paper cup, and Isabel took it without a fight, tipping it to her lips as the girls migrated to a cluster of wooden benches, huddling around a delta with a guitar. Pomegranate burst over her tongue, the cocktail lacking alcohol, which she was grateful for. It wasn't allowed on grounds, but that didn't mean it wasn't often snuck into the drinks that lined the tables of these sort of parties.
"Cheers to whoever gets the prizes this month,"
Eve said, tipping her cup toward Isabel's. Eve was a tall girl, her slender form always looking fashionable in anything she wore. Her hazel hair hung loose about her shoulders, her bright blue eyes peaceful as she hummed along to the song. The classes at Ironside centered exclusively around the arts. The government was only interested in producing icons who would contribute to the global economy by boosting their cultural sectors. That was why they accepted gifted refugees without complaint, unlike the other countries who had very strict border rules. Isabel settled in against the fence, her head cushioned by the thick, fragrant vines as she listened to the delta strum away, several of the surrounding people joining in his song. It was about a boy who had lost his mate, and how the mate bond haunted his sleep every night, reaching for someone who would never reach back. Mates were rare, usually only occurring in the gifted with the strongest abilities. It was more common for people to go their entire lives without ever finding out they had a mate, especially since the conditions for finding their mate were deadly. Quite literally, one had to be right beside their mate and reach the brink of death before the bond was revealed. Some believed the bond was formed by the near death, while others believed it was all the machinations of fate. Fate brought people together, and fate put them in danger at exactly the right moment. Isabel's parents had a complete mate bond, but they never spoke about how it happened. For some people, the stories were extremely private. Somewhere nearby, a fight broke out, and everyone glanced over, asking who it was. Apparently, it wasn't anyone worth their attention, because they quickly resumed their easy conversations, even when there was a loud crash. When Bellamy walked into their circle, flanked by two other Betas, Isabel slipped backwards off the bench and lost herself in the crowd, letting the bustle of students pull her to the other end of Jasmine Field. She was almost clear when a hand suddenly landed on her shoulder, spinning her around.
"You weren't going to congratulate me?"
a smooth, easygoing voice asked. She knew who it was before she even turned, so it was easier to stick the polite smile on her face and keep it in place as she looked up at Bellamy. He was smiling back at her, flashing those straight white teeth, one hand wrapped around a paper cup. She could smell the pomegranate, but she could also smell the alcohol in his cup. She tried to shrug his hand off, but he held tight.
"Congratulations,"
she said, hoping he would release her once he got what he wanted. Instead, he dragged her closer. She could see the pores along his straight nose and smell his tangy deodorant trying to hold back the stickier smell of his sweat. He was usually doing some kind of sport, swimming or running in the afternoons, so he usually smelled a little sweaty. His chest almost brushed hers, so she hunched her shoulders in, making herself smaller. She heard the echo of something tickle her mind before his voice suddenly burst into her head.
You look good tonight.
Her eyes widened, and he noted her reaction, his smile stretching, his light green eyes narrowing in victory. He leaned down, his breath against her ear.
I've been practicing. Are you impressed?
You're not allowed to... She sputtered, but he cut her off, raised a finger to hover over her mouth. She was glad he didn't actually touch her. There was somewhat of an unspoken rule at Ironside. Some students actively practiced their abilities, trying to hone them, and the rest of the students didn't say anything about it. So far, the Ironside officials hadn't interfered, or tasked any of the professors with interfering. They were all walking a fine line, thinking their fan clubs on the outside gave them some sort of immunity. They couldn't just disappear from the show, could they? Popularity lent a strange kind of security in that sense. She immediately yanked herself out of his grip.
Hey now, no need to overreact.
His smile was charming for the cameras.
We're allowed to have a friendly moment. Won't get in trouble. There are a few betas who wouldn't mind having a friendly moment with you if you ever want to stop slumming it with the Omegas. We could use a Sigma in the dorms to pick up after us and make us feel good.
Get out! She demanded, holding her hands over her ears. He chuckled, directing his attention to the nearest camera.
She's shy,
he said with a charming wink for his viewers,
before brushing right by her to rejoin the activity. Another set of hands landed over her shoulders before her breath had even returned to normal. The boy, who she thought she recognized as one of Bellamy's friends, spun her around.
Oh, are we leaving already?
He asked, the expression on his face one of a casual friend. Except she had never spoken to him before in her life. She barely even categorized his features, since she was edging closer and closer to panic. She tried to squirm out of his grip, but he only tucked her under one of his long, heavy arms and began to steer her away. He smelled worse than Bellamy, like burning clay, sweat, and vodka.
Make a scene and you'll regret it,
he whispered, a chemical stench on his breath.
You don't know what I'm capable of, and I doubt your daddy wants this to be your next viral video. Word is, he hasn't even come to visit you yet. Is he still mad at you for jumping into the lake last year? It was a pretty desperate grab for views.
She twisted just enough to try and catch sight of anyone she knew, anyone who might actually respond if she shouted out to them. But there was no one. So she let him steer her to the back of Dorm D, where he promptly pushed her up against the wall. It was a common misconception that Sigmas would do anything asked of them, which was why people often acted like they had no power at all. Because if a Sigma could help someone lift the dark and heavy thoughts that weighed their family, friends, and peers down, then surely they would. They wouldn't be able to help themselves, right? Well, people were wrong.
Kiss me,
the boy demanded, planting his hands either side of her head and ducking down, his lips trying to push against hers. He didn't even wait for a response. He just assumed she would. She twisted, ducking from beneath his arms, but he grabbed her and pinned her again.
Kiss me, Sigma.
This time, it was less of a suggestion. If he had been an alpha, he could have used alpha voice. He could have made her. For a horribly weak moment, she considered obeying just to get it over and done with. In her experience, it was easier to go along with what people wanted. The torment didn't last as long as when she fought against it. But this was a different kind of torment. This was her first kiss. Isabel let her body drop straight down, grabbing two rough handfuls of dirt as he captured her and dragged her upright again. But when he came for her this time, she mashed both handfuls of dirt into his face, making sure to focus on his eyes. He shoved her away, and she cracked her head against the wall, feeling the sharp stab of pain as she caught herself upright and bolted away. Being small and slight was a distinct advantage, as she easily slipped through the students still enjoying their party. Her dorm was too far, so she ran to the library instead, sequestering herself away in the familiar little corner where nobody ever bothered her. She laid her throbbing head on her arms and closed her eyes. But still, she didn't cry. Not now, not ever. Theodore felt a punch against his arm.
"What the hell is wrong with you?"
Moses demanded, slitting a look to him as people scattered out of their path.
"Nothing,"
he lied, shaking his head to dislodge the image of a familiar